So I think of meditation when I sit down to practice as really a kind of first step. And I'm immediately faced with my own powerlessness over my thoughts, over my body. So we surrender into this experience. That which we thought was ours, our mind and body, we discover does not belong to us. The Buddha says that if you own something, then you have control over it. So we very quickly realize that we don't really own our mind and body. So I'd love to take questions about practice or anything at this point. Any difficulties people had? Any insights they'd like to share? Well, either I'm a very good teacher or you're is the problem, one of them. And you know, the approach of mindfulness is not to try to make it the way we would like it to be, but to just see it very clearly. And to see that, as I was saying right near the end there, that the problem arises not so much with the experience itself, which might be unpleasant, but it certainly isn't overwhelming. But it's our reaction to it. Something, you know, there's this, especially in the silence and stillness, things that ordinarily might not even be noticed, or would, you know, you would just kind of go, oh, whatever. They kind of get amplified, like a microscope, right? So then there's this sensation, and then what happens is, I don't like the sensation. I have this feeling of resistance, aversion, we classically call it. Right? Ew, there's a sensation which is unpleasant, and then there's the reaction to it. Well, that's where the problem begins. The sensation itself really isn't that much of a problem if you can drop the secondary response to it. So this is what mindfulness is trying to bring us to, this raw, bare awareness of just what is. And mindfulness can include noticing, oh, there's that resistance, or there's that aversion. I see, there's that too. So our awareness is not really affected by our experience. And that is to say, awareness is like a blank slate that's just watching. It's just a watcher, we can say. And so if you can relate from the place of watching, rather than identifying so closely with, oh, I like this, I don't like that, ooh, this is painful, but just go, oh, that's how it is, this is unpleasant, then there's a whole shift in what's happening. Instead of it being a problem, it just becomes what is, and actually, if you bring interest to it, it can become something to explore and learn from. So what we try to do, rather than identifying with the reaction, is to explore the experience itself on the basic, raw level. So that means that if we're sitting and we notice the shoulder hurts, that we take the attention right into the shoulder. Say, because pain is usually unexplored. Our reaction to pain is, I need to change it. I need to get rid of it. Which is one half of the cause of addiction. Right? The other half is, I want pleasure. Give me something good. Get rid of the bad. Those are the two sort of addictive tendencies. So, if rather than trying to change it, we go and take the mind to the place, to the experience, we start to explore with a kind of scientific interest. What is pain? Most of us have never actually experienced, or in the sense of knowing clearly, what pain was, how it actually felt. We're so in the reactive mode that we never really know what the sensations are like. So the teachings suggest that we start to look at the different qualities wrapped up in sensation. Is there heat? Is there coolness? Is there tension? Is there throbbing? Is there pulsing? Is there heaviness? Is there lightness? And just starting to look at these characteristics as just pure experience. Right? As soon as we do that, we've changed the relationship. We're not identifying with the experience. We're just watching. And that in itself is very healing. Mindfulness is very healing because it changes how we relate to the experience. We get out of that tension of resistance and get into the ease of just watching, of just knowing. Now, there are sensations and then there are sensations. If there's a lot of pain and there's a way that you can alleviate it through shifting your posture, then at some certain point after exploring it, you breathe, you relax, you let go, and then you consciously move to do what you can do. If the pain isn't really something that can be changed through just changing your posture, for instance, if you're sitting with your legs crossed and your knees start to burn, well, you can, you know, move your legs. But if it's a pain that's just a result of this body that you have, and it's just kind of comes up and sitting still, if it gets very intense, just you come back to the breath and sort of move in and out of it so that you're not just... Sometimes there's a shift that can happen as we're watching, a subtle shift into resistance that we don't catch. And so it will go from just watching into, oh God, oh poor me, this is really horrible. Boy, the teacher was really mean to make me do this. And when we get into that place, it's like to come back, you know, let me just breathe, relax. Because oftentimes what happens around pain is that the body clenches. And so we have to be very aware of that tendency. And so part of this process of watching the pain is to watch everything that's going on around it as well. So noticing that you try to keep the muscles very soft around the difficult place so that you're not increasing it through tension. That's the pain wrap. Yes?
When I say pain wrap, a lot of emotions come up, negative emotions. I go into such a mental attack about the fact that I've been meditating for a long time and I still have all these emotions.
So
the dust just takes over and I just think,
meditation is not a cure for emotions. I think we would like it to be. I know that when I first started to practice, when I was still drinking and using it, I thought that it was going to fix my emotional states, which were pretty ragged. So that's the first thing. You know, I just think it's so painful to judge ourselves for having the feelings we're having. I mean, first of all, we're in pain. You know, first of all, you're sad or you're anxious or you're depressed, you know. And that's painful enough. And then we decide that that's not acceptable. We shouldn't be that way. So then we pile on. You know, start beating ourselves up for feeling bad. You know, who else would we do that to besides ourselves? I mean, that's cruel. Right? But we do it. Of course, I do it. So much like working with the pain, we have to get to that raw, pure experience. And we're afraid to. We're afraid of feeling those feelings, which is why we want them to go away, which is why we hope that meditation will make them go away. You know, well, if I just meditate, everything will get very cooled out, you know, and I'll be like one of those monks, you know. Like, monks don't have emotions. And so we have to approach our emotions with a very gentle, kind, soft tread. And just as with the pain, to open to the experience, what is it? What is this? I've spent my whole life running from this, and I've never really looked at it. I've never really felt it. And really, to feel emotions is again to go into the body. So emotions are essentially held in the body. This is how we can experience them. In some sense, it seems as though emotions are in the body and yet not quite in the body. Like they're sort of around here somewhere, you know, floating just a little off the surface. But wherever they are, we can feel into them. So if you can breathe and just, oh, there's that. Oh, that's unpleasant. That's sadness. That's anger. That's fear. And know that. And know that it's also human. It's not you. It's not something wrong with you. The problem would be if you weren't having emotions. One teacher says, emotions are just life moving through you. I found that very helpful for several reasons. One is that it told me that the feelings I was having were an expression of life. And I could, on some level, appreciate that they're saying, you're alive, just like feeling the breath. When you stop breathing or you stop feeling, that's when you have a real problem. Because you're not alive anymore. So I guess that's not a problem, but the end of problems. But so the emotions are life, and they are also moving through you. The key attitude is to realize and to see and feel the dynamic quality of the emotions. The tendency when we have an emotion is to think or to believe or to have a sense that it's something permanent that has arrived. I can ramble on this a little bit if you want me to. This is one of my favorite topics. If I write another book, it might be on this. This is one of the qualities of mind. Whatever is happening in this moment, we remember everything that's like that we've experienced before. Not necessarily images of it or actions, but we have a sense of it. And that's a survival technique, right? Because human beings, what's kept us alive for these millions of years, kept our genes being passed along, is that we were smarter than other animals. We could remember things. And if we remembered dangerous things like, oh, there's a lion that lives over on that hill, you know, avoid that hill. Then every time we got close to that hill, we were, oh, lion, don't go over there. And we headed the other way. So we start to associate feelings with past experiences. And when we're remembering only all the times we've been depressed, and we're feeling depressed now, and our thoughts are depressive, we think, I'm always depressed. Because we can't remember being happy. When you're happy, you think, you know, I've been depressed occasionally, but it'll be a big issue. Because all you remember is being happy. Same with fear. God, I'm just always fear. Anger. I'm just such an angry person. I'm always yelling at people. So there's this sort of globalizing that happens with our experience. We have a moment of experience and we just expand it out so it seems like I always feel like this. This is who I am. I'm a depressed person. I talk about depression a lot because that's my story. So that's what I know well. Okay, so I'm just going to use that as an example. I'm sure no one else hears that. So. I'm depressed all the time. This is how I feel. This is who I am. Life sucks. Now, why bother? And I'm a shitty meditator to boot. Because if I were a good meditator, I'd be able to meditate this away. Like all those smiling Buddhas. And, you know, this is one of the problems. We have these images of Buddhas and of gurus that are smiling. You ever notice that in the brochures, they're always, come to my retreat and you'll be smiling like me afterwards. You know. It's all just marketing, you know. So if we realize, and this is where cognition helps, if we remember, if we're cognitive that emotions are moving through me, they are not coming to stay. They are not moving in with their furniture, you know, their wardrobe. They are simply passing through. Well, if we are paying attention as we're feeling an emotion, we will feel that quality, that dynamic quality. You know, what does an emotion feel like? Where is it? Well, it's kind of like this. It's not like this most of the time. Well, there might be like a little pit in the stomach, but really, if you get in there close, you will see that just like the pain in the shoulder or the pain in the knees, it's going like this. It's moving. It's a dynamic quality. It's not solid. And after dinner tonight, after you met with your friends and had a laugh and a nice meal, and you're in a good mood, it'll be completely gone and you will have forgotten about it. But when it's here, it's the most important thing in the world and the most frightening thing. So the approach, if I can review, is feel into the experience fully, surrendering, knowing it, allowing it, not being afraid, because you know that it's not going to kill you. You know that it's not going to stay forever. It's just a feeling. So there you are with it, and you're noticing its quality, and then you're reminding yourself, this is just coming and going. And whatever thoughts come up about it, remind yourself that those are just thoughts. Again, not facts. If you watch your thoughts, they speed by so fast. We think they're so important that they're, you know, what was that I was just thinking? You know, that, and yet we think that's who I am, my thoughts, my feelings, my body. None of it stays. You can't hold on to anything. There's a wonderful book called The Mindful Way Through Depression. Have you read that? You nodded. Yes. They talk about how what we try to do with difficult emotions is think them away. And that what we do with our emotions is we create a negative relationship with them. I feel like this, but I should feel like that. So right away, we feel bad about how we feel. Because I'm not feeling the way I'm supposed to feel. And then I'm going to think my way out of that. Now, how did I get into this? Probably by thinking. So I'm not going to think my way out of it. What happens with the thinking is it makes it worse. I'm just focusing on the negativity. Feeling into the experience and allowing it allows the emotion to have its life, to have its space. Emotions just need to play out. They come, they arrive, they're there for a while, and then they go. We give them the space, give them their life. Respect them without getting too involved, and they will pass like the clouds. Easier to meditate when you have a guide.
Yeah, if I can sit, then I'm much more likely to not be able to stay with it.
Yeah, and some people find it helpful, some people find it irritating. I mean, it puts me to sleep, usually. I usually don't hear anything. I hear maybe the first sentence, and then it goes out. But if it's useful, then, you know, it's great to just get some download some guided meditations and play them for yourself when you meditate. Why not? I mean, ultimately, what we're trying to do is internalize the instructions so that it's just sort of organic to us. But there's no reason you have to, there's no time schedule on that. Use guided meditations. I have some on my website. Kevin Griffin down there. And you can download them for free and just print them and listen to them. So you were having a normal meditation experience. No, because, just as I was kind of describing during meditation, first of all, our minds are trained to think. They've been doing that most of our lives. I don't know when we actually start to think, but certainly by the time we're 3 or 4, we're pretty actively thinking. And as I say, thinking is the survival mechanism. And it's what separates humans from everything else on this planet. Thinking is what allows this building to be here. Thinking is why you aren't out in the fields, wouldn't be in the fields, why you aren't just hunting and gathering. So, thinking is wonderful, However, it's taken over a bit. It's kind of taken over the mind, and we get habituated into just letting it run the show. So with meditation, and particularly with mindfulness, we're trying to kind of back out of that a little bit and start to change that relationship so that the thinking isn't completely in control or completely dominant. But when you first start, of course, you're starting from the place of thinking runs everything. So you have to, this is why we practice on a daily basis and why people go on retreats for pretty long periods of time in silence, meditating, is to train the mind to not be so caught in thinking. But simply to see that you're thinking all the time and start to see what type of thoughts you have all the time is really the beginning of insight. Just to know it, because most people don't realize that they are thinking all the time. It's kind of, the voices downstairs are kind of like the voices in the back of your mind. Here you are listening to Kevin, but at the same time you're like, I don't know. And the falling asleep, as I say, very natural. It's just something you work with. You know, and there are various ways of working with it. But first of all, we want to just be aware of the thinking. I mean, of the sleeping. Also be aware of what we're saying. So to actually feel sleepiness. You know, sleepiness is actually one of the triggers for relapse. You know, the acronym HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. So tiredness can be a trigger for relapse. So if you're not aware of sleepiness as it arises, you can start to get triggered rather than realizing, oh, I'm tired, I need to go to sleep, I don't need to go to the pub, you know. And just, so when we practice meditation, we start to notice, oh, that's what sleepiness feels like. You know? Rather than, oh, I'm getting sleepy, I hate this, or how am I going to meditate, whatever, I can't do this. It's just like, oh, this is what sleepiness feels like. But if you're sleeping, if you are falling asleep when you're meditating, what's helpful is to sit up straight and open the eyes. That's usually the most effective counter to it. But sometimes we're just sleepy. And sometimes you'll be meditating and you'll have this dip and you're kind of sleepy, sleepy, sleepy. And then if you stick with it, you'll come up the other side and you'll have actually gotten some rest. Because meditation is very restful. And sometimes you come out the other side and you're in this very nice place. So the clarity comes back and yet you're now nicely relaxed. It's important to stick with it and not say, oh, I'm falling asleep, I might as well go to bed. Especially if it's in the middle of the day. Did that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
I found the early part of the meditation where you invited us to be aware this body is a solid block, and then be aware of feeling, and then be aware of hearing, and then that separation, I found that first of all it was a bit like trying to watch two or three television sets, you know, where I was going, oh, I juggle that plate, I juggle this plate, this plate. It was quite interesting to experience that. Also, I really, it was interesting to experience a separation between body, sensation, hearing, and particularly sensation and emotion, and how linked, that was really sort of quite interesting for me, actually.
Yeah, it's I think a somewhat unconventional way of teaching meditation. Usually they taught almost backwards from that. They start, people usually start with the breath and then expand out at a certain point. But it just comes from my own experience. What I like is to open with a sense of spaciousness and just kind of acknowledging everything that's here. Rather than, because if I try to immediately go to this narrow awareness, everything's kind of intruding and I'm trying to fight it off. But if I kind of go, well, it's all here, I don't have to fight with it. I'll just let it be here and then come to the breath. For me, that works. And what teachers teach is what works for them. But I will say also that part of what I'm trying to do with these, having you focus on numerous things at once, is fill up the mind. Because it's like the mind has a certain spectrum of awareness that's, or I don't even know if awareness is quite the right word, but that's going to get filled up. And if you don't fill it up with just awareness, like sense awareness, then thoughts kind of have more room to come in. So if you kind of fill it, and this actually has some scientific credibility from what I've been reading lately, that if you kind of fill it with a few things so that you're so busy trying to hear and feel and then be with the breath at the same time that there's no energy or space left for thoughts to come in. Whereas for me, if I just try to narrowly pay attention to these little tips, my nose, and just feel my breath and just feel it here and stay there, it's kind of like there's all this room with it, and then I'll notice that all these thoughts are coming in, but I'm not even like, you know, really, oh, realizing it. Kind of, I'm spacing out in this weird way. So, but all of this is to try to describe and to try to is to try to describe an experience which is very personal and has to be discovered for ourselves. You know, I have a friend who's a therapist, and I asked him, "Well, what do you kind of therapy do you do?" And he wouldn't. I couldn't pin him down. You know, he wasn't sort of saying he was a Freudian or Adlerian or Rogerian or cognitive or whatever. Finally, he said, "I said, well, what do you do when somebody comes in and sits in front of you? What do you do?" He said, "Well, I try to help them to develop a therapeutic relationship with themselves." And when he said that, a light went on for me. That's what I do with meditation. I try to help people to develop a meditative relationship with themselves. So I'm not trying to, I don't want to suggest that you try to meditate like I do. You have your own mind. You have to explore your own experience and your own mind and see how it works. Here are the tools we have. And now take them and play with them and see what happens. Don't take the word of the teacher like, this is the right way to meditate, that's the wrong way. That's crap. You know, there's no right and wrong way to meditate. For, you know, every individual has to find that for themselves. So we put out the tools, then you have to go and explore for yourself. I can't go inside your mind and, you know, manipulate. You have to watch what's happening. Is this helping to be with the breath, with these sensations or emotions? Should I get a mantra? Should I, you know, go to the Sufi dancing down the street? You know, what works for me? You have to find that for yourself. Yes? Yes, it's also something we say at the end of meetings.
And I was thinking about that when, you know, when I get caught up in my thoughts, thinking about it, but I'm trying to, it's an act of will in a way, to try not to get caught up in the thoughts, by not existing. Sometimes it helps me just if I tell myself to be here, if I remind myself to be here, to sort of bring myself back. But then I'm also aware of my mind space.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of using my mind.
Yep. Well, what else do you have to work with?
Well, the difference between what is using your mind when you're aware of what is and letting go of what is.
Yeah. Well, we use the mind to train the mind. And there can be a more mechanical process in the beginning. I think that, I mean, what I certainly wanted to develop in my practice was a more organic process where, I mean, for instance, one of the, you know, Burmese methods is to make a mental note of everything you experience, thinking, hearing, in, out, in, out. You know, and of course that's thinking. But at a certain point, I think you can kind of, all that can fall away, and you can just be in the presence. But in the beginning, it's very helpful to have those very clear tools. To say, just be here, that's a great mantra, right? Meditation, certainly mindfulness meditation, isn't so much about not thinking either. It's more about changing our relationship to the thoughts, you know, seeing what they are, seeing how they control us, and not being so controlled by them. But, you know, I think it's fine. You know, there's this tendency also to kind of, you know, black or white, like, oh, thinking's bad. I should stop thinking. Oh, I can't. If I'm thinking when I'm, you know, thinking about meditating, if I'm saying to myself, in, out, or be here, then I'm thinking. If I shouldn't be doing that because thinking is bad. Right? Oh, no, not really. It's just, and so ultimately, I'd say, is it a helpful thought? Great. I mean, the Buddha obviously was an amazing thinker, you know. Look at his teachings. He had to spend a lot of time thinking to get all that. So he wasn't opposed to thinking. He was opposed to negative and destructive thinking.
I really like what you're saying about kind of almost like the white noise.
Uh-huh, yeah.
the stream of thoughts, and I'm also feeling this meditation a couple of months in, and I've used it in my recovery. Something that I've also read about recently is the notion of opposition thinking in context of your everyday thinking while going thinking and meditation.
You mean challenging what your thoughts are?
Pretty much, and yeah. In the literature it's about...
like cognitive therapy.
Yeah, I suppose, like kind of being mindful of it. Like if I'm walking down the street and feeling depressed or also experience some depression, to you know, be mindful of it, and then all of a sudden, you know, put your shoulders back, smile, start thinking of things, and kind of bring that into meditation as well. And I was just wondering what you...
Well, that's actually a Buddhist technique. It's called replacing, or replacing with the opposite. So when you notice a negative or destructive mind state, to intentionally bring in something that either is the opposite of that. So if you're angry, to try to bring in loving kindness, or at least something that kind of neutralizes it. Like, let me just feel this. So if I, again, relate to the awareness rather than the experience, so it's just like, I'm just feeling this. That's okay. I mean, this is extremely useful. And it depends, as you say, it depends on awareness. Until you're aware that you're doing that, you can't change it. You know, until you're realize that you're having the negative thought, you can't replace it with anything. So that's why it's so important to train the mind to be aware. But it's also helpful to have strategies for what to do once you become aware. Now, sometimes mindfulness is presented as this completely passive kind of practice. Just accept everything. Just let it come, let it go. You know, but some things should be accepted. I don't think you should accept everything. You know, I think that's a naive view. However, if we try to jump from awareness to now I'm going to change it, we get into this adversarial relationship with our experience. So it's a very delicate process. We see what's happening, and on some level we have to accept that it is happening. You know, we might not like it, and we might not say that we're going to allow it. We're just not going to. We might not be saying that we won't do anything about it, but we have to accept this is here and really know it before we try to replace it or change it, because that replacing or changing can be an act of aversion if we don't do it with care. So mindfulness needs to be there at every step of the process. There's mindfulness of that the experience is happening, and then there's mindfulness of our reaction, and mindfulness of our desire to change it. And then we kind of look at that. Is this wise to try to change this? And then what's the energy that I'm bringing to that that effort or that intention to change? Is it an energy of kindness, of openness, or is an aggressive energy that's trying to force something to happen? This is a key point, right? Because right there, we can just feed into it and create another struggle. So that replacing has to be done with real care. That it's not aggressive, that's not saying, I shouldn't be feeling this way, I'm going to replace it with some nice loving kindness. I'm going to get rid of this anger because I need to be more loving, God damn it. So this is why mindfulness is the substrata of all of this practice. It needs to be there each stage. Yes, one more, and I think we should take a little break. And I think I'm going to call on her to take a break.
Yeah, it's just sort of the idea of when we were just as meditation, we talked about the sticky thoughts, and then you're saying them are the ones that just kind of are bumping on.
Yeah.
It made me sort of think about the concept of flow versus sort of being spaced out. And something that I've noticed is kind of the addict nature of myself, you know, is that I can sometimes notice the meditations that have been spaced out for a while. And,
yeah.
or even if I'm reading, I'll be looking at the page for 5-10 minutes and maybe it's on the other end. And that is very much part of, you know, that kind of part of my personality. However, then there's also, in meditation, like you said, you can get very deep relaxation, you can get into flow, you can be quite concentrated, but you're not really thinking about anything, I suppose. It's just that subtle difference. It's really easier with the kind of sticky thoughts because they're about me and my stories, once I notice them, to let them go. Sometimes it's almost like a sober blackout, you know, where I kind of think, I've been gone for 10 minutes.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you're describing, you know, various mind states. You know, when you teach meditation, you say, when you notice that your mind has wandered, acknowledge that and then come back to your breath. Well, you might not notice for 10 minutes. Many times I sit down in the morning, do my meditation, and it's 10 minutes before I realize, oh, I was going to meditate. So I'm still, you know, I sit down, I'm thinking, I walk into my office where I meditate, I'm thinking, I sit in the chair, I'm thinking, you know, I get into my posture, I'm thinking, and the thinking just carries on, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, right, breath. Forget the breath. You know, something good going on there, I've got to solve that now. I mean, the thoughts are always telling us how important they are, consisting. Now you need to listen to this right now. So, this is just what we, you know, just what happens. Now, if you meditate a lot, you get to see a lot of crap, and you get to not be in control a lot of the time. And I've been doing this practice for 30 years. You know, my mind doesn't care. You know, it's still the same mind. There are times when I sit down and, you know, I get very concentrated and it's lovely and it's great. And then there are times when it's just, you know, it could be the first time I ever meditate. It's a lot like the artist with the blank canvas, you know, starting anew each time. So, but the key to, you know, I have my approach, which is a very forgiving approach. Other teachers might be more demanding. But to me, it's like, what am I going to do? You know? What I know is that if I add a judgment, I'm just creating more pain. And yeah, maybe I should try harder, and maybe I could be better at this, but I would just be more disciplined, and, you know, why can't you, you know, blah, 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 blah. The stuff I've been telling myself since I was 12. That's wrong with me, that I'm not doing it right. And it's like, you know, that doesn't help. You know, because every time I do that, and then I catch myself doing it, I go inside myself, and what I feel is pain. I feel the suffering of self-judgment. And I would rather space out for the whole hour than suffer, you know, in judging myself. If that's what my mind wants to do, so be it. You know. I'll try to bring myself back, but I will not beat myself up about it. You know, it's just not worth it. It doesn't accomplish anything. And the truth is, from my perspective, my experience, is that when I beat myself up, it just churns up more stuff. And then if I just really surrender to it, it's coming, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, it just runs out of energy. If I don't jump in and really tangle with it, if I just sit and wait, a lot of what meditation is just sitting and waiting for it to shut up. You know? And, you know, who knows how meditation works? I mean, we have all these instructions, right? They might just be things to keep you busy while you're waiting. If you just sit still and don't do anything, don't talk to anybody, don't look at your computer, don't get up and run around the house. You know, if you just sit there with your eyes closed for a while, eventually it quiets down. It's just that meditation isn't something that meditation teachers made up. It's an organic process that is, you know, part of our nature. All we are trying to do is tap into it. The instructions are just trying to guide you to a place that already exists within you. And Stephen Batchelor talks about this very beautifully. He says that we try to make meditation into a technique. And we think that it's the technique that makes it happen. But he says, no, actually, the meditative attitude and the state of meditation is something that's within us that's just been left fallow in our culture. We haven't cultivated it. Left fallow and cultivated. And that what we're doing is just cultivating that fallow field. That when it wakes up and you feel that, you feel, oh yeah, this isn't some like induced state. This is totally, this is just being alive. This is just being fully alive. And there's a purity to it, an essence to it. It's just wonderful. But where is it? It doesn't come by imposing on ourselves, telling ourselves, right, be, you know, behave. It comes by just surrendering, allowing, showing up one day at a time, one breath at a time. So I think that we should have a little break because we've been sitting here on our bunks for all this time. Eventually, they get worn out. What I want to suggest, though, is that this is a day of mindfulness. So, which doesn't mean, you know, shut up, you know, enjoy yourself here. But just that, you know, as you're sitting and listening to me, that you're mindful. As you're going to the loo, that you're mindful. Just that, you know, bringing a little awareness to this whole experience today. So that we're together in the sphere of awareness, of presence together. And,